It's a pleasure, as always, to be here. Thank you for the warm welcome. I enjoy coming here every year. I did learn last year something quite interesting. I heard that the Methodists are very supportive of the institution of marriage. I just learned that, so that's great, because, as she mentioned, I was just married last year, and it's kind of funny because people had told me the reason why you hadn't hired me and replaced Reverend Hester was because I wasn't married. And last year I got married, and I heard, no, that wasn't it. It's also because we want a rabbi who's married with children. That's what I was told. Finally, my wife is now pregnant, thank you. So, very excited. So I'm now ready to give what Asbury has really needed all these years, that rabbinical touch. So I want to wish Reverend Hester all the best on what the Methodists call a sabbatical and what we Jews call retirement. And I want to tell him that he's always welcome here anytime he wants to come. Give me 3 weeks' notice, and that's all I'm asking. So my wife is due in November, so very excited. It's very, very exciting, as you can imagine. People, when they found out my wife was pregnant, they kept asking me, what is it? What is it? And I kept telling them, I don't know yet. I don't know yet. And you know, it takes 4 months. They kept asking, what is it? At 3 months. Finally, at a few weeks before 4 months, my mother-in-law came into town and wanted to buy the baby clothes. So we went to do one of those 3D imaging so we could find out a little early. And I'm proud to tell you that I'm 99% sure that she is a doctor. So, very excited as a Jew. That's a really wonderful thing. So today I want to talk about something a little different. I'm going to talk about Kabbalah, mysticism. Now, I was telling a friend that I was going to speak today to you about the Kabbalah. And he told me that I should definitely not do that because it's so confusing and there's a good chance people would leave without learning anything. And I thought about it and I said, listen, I only speak here once a year, so I really got to go with my skill set. Yeah, you got it now. Took a second, but I can tell you got it. So in the book of Ezekiel, which was read so beautifully by Sherry, he sees a vision of God on a chariot. And out of the midst came the likeness of four living creatures, and it was their appearance. They had the likeness of a man, and everyone had four faces, and everyone had four wings. Was this really God? No, but we do believe, or the sages do believe, that it was a vision or some sort of metaphor of God on a chariot pulled by four creatures. And for those of you who do not realize it, that is the basis for mysticism. Mysticism starts with Ezekiel and Ezekiel's vision. Now, a little background. Ezekiel was a priest. It was very rare for a prophet to be a priest. And he was preaching after the temple had been destroyed. Now, in ancient society, if you were sent into exile and defeated, that meant pretty much your god had been defeated or killed, and you just took on a new god. So this vision basically said, I am a god no matter where you are. I am not a god tied to any landmass. I am a god of any place. So at this moment, when Ezekiel sees this vision, it teaches Judaism that, hey, this is a boundary-less god that will go anywhere with you, and that you should continue to believe in this ethical god, this single entity. So with this begins what we would call mysticism or the Kabbalah. The vision of this chariot is the building block of it all. And what it does, this Kabbalah, which you hear so much about, it stretches our minds in ways that sometimes don't feel comfortable and certainly aren't easy, but it's helping us to find new ways to connect to God, which is sometimes wonderful, sometimes frustrating. I'm often asked about the Kabbalah by various people from a variety of religions, and I tell them that the Kabbalah is not one belief system. It is a variable of different ideas given by mystics through the years. They glean better ways to live our lives through trying to find these attachments to God. Now, it's based in a book called the Zohar. Do you ever hear the word Zohar? That is kind of like the Bible of mysticism, but there are a myriad of ideas that come from other origins, original sources. Now, for instance, just to give you an example, 70 is a mystical number. And so I will be sharing 70 different Kabbalistic visions today. Each one only lasts a minute or two, so don't worry about that. So first, let's try and see how we do here. Now, the first part of Kabbalah is to acknowledge that God is beyond our understanding. Even if we must understand that we must try and understand God because of the minds God gave us to understand things, understanding this belief, we can move on to one of the major tenets of Kabbalah, which is very difficult. That is, God is everything. Period. Simple but difficult. God is everything. And if God is everything, then we must be part of God. Now, this is quite confusing. Some would say heretical. How can we be God or part of God? Aren't we individuals created by God? Isn't individuality one of the central themes of the modern world? How can I be part of God if God created me on the sixth day, or if you believe that we evolved over millions of years, or both? How can I be an individual and part of God? And it's a very complicated belief, but I did hear one analogy that I think brings it home best. Think of each of us as a wave in the ocean. For a short time, we exist as a wave. While we are a wave, we can look around, and what do we see? More ocean. That's all we see. Some of us may be larger waves. Some of us are more foamy. Some of us last longer as waves. Some of us can see more waves than others. Some of us engulf other waves, and some of us are engulfed. Some of us move around more often as waves, and some of us as waves sit more often on couches and watch football after church on Sunday. But we are all waves. For a short time, we have this individuality. We have self-identity. Yet, even when we are a wave, we are always connected to the ocean. Is it possible to catch a wave and remove it from the ocean? It is not. We are all waves. Then the Kabbalah teaches us to remember that is our place in the world. Our place is the same as every other human being. We may live as a more successful wave in the eyes of the other waves. Our time may be remembered longer, but we are always connected to everything. We can never be separated. We cannot escape the fact that we are part of God in an endless ocean. And in the end, our wave flickers from view, but we always return to the ocean. We are always part of God. Do we remember our time as a wave, or do we meld back into everything? That is a very difficult question we're not going to discuss today. That's for another time. I just want to start off by saying the Kabbalists believe we are part of everything. We stand irrevocably tied to every other single person on this world. We are connected no matter what we want. When we damage someone, we damage a part of the whole. When we act selfishly or stereotype others, we affect the entire ocean. We're not talking pebbles, we are the ocean. My mother believed there were three professions suitable to her sons, or else they should consider themselves nothing. Doctor, lawyer, and dead to me. And so... So that tells you that I am nothing. However, according to the Kabbalists, the best thing you can be is nothing. Nothing is the best. Think about it that way. In Hebrew, God, which has many names, one of the names is called Ein Sof, which means without end, or the mystics translate God's name as God is nothing. Now that sounds really terrible, calling God nothing, but let me conclude by saying we are something. We are finite. We are beings with definable limits. God has no limits. God is endless. You cannot put a label on God, therefore God is nothing. The mystics write, whenever a person regards himself as a discrete individual being, he is no longer with nothing, but has returned to the level of somethingness, everyday reality. The Kabbalists tell us in order to expand ourselves, we should strive to see ourselves as part of everything. The more we become bogged down in the non-essential minutiae of life, the less we comprehend the magnitude of our existence. We are part of God. We should consider ourselves as nothing. The more we center ourselves on stuff, the more we concentrate on our grudges, the more we dwell on our mistakes, the more we think about ourselves, about others, the more we become something and leave nothingness behind, the less connected we are to God. Yet that's a catch-22. As a parent-to-be, soon I know I'm going to need to be caught up in the minutiae of raising a child. Thank goodness recent studies, I think from Harvard, have shown that the most highly functional children these days are the ones in which only the mother wakes up in the middle of the night to tend to the child. I'm going to send the link to these studies to all of you as soon as I finish writing them. So I look forward, though, to the minutiae of changing diapers, of feeding schedules, and clothes shopping, even though I know it means concentrating on myself. Because we do need to concentrate on ourselves and our family. We need to live in this world as discrete individual beings. We can't be completely nothing yet. However, we need to learn to separate the important and essential minutiae from the non-essential, the enhancing our lives stuff from the de-enhancing our lives stuff. And the catch-22 is only we know how to do that. We only ourselves know how to bring ourselves to nothingness by concentrating on the fact that we are part of the whole. In the beginning of the book of Genesis, we find a seemingly obvious scientific mistake that leads to an important Kabbalistic thought. On day one, God creates light and darkness. Should have got that one. Next week. All right, study that. However, God waits to create the sun, moons, and stars until day four. Think about that. Day one is light and darkness. Day four is the sun and the moon. So the mystics right away saw this is not a mistake because there are no mistakes in the Bible. This mistake led the mystics to reevaluate the word in Hebrew for light. They came to believe that this light from the first day wasn't the light from the sun, the moon, or electricity, but actually the light of awareness of God. A spiritual light that Adam and Eve saw from one end of space to the end of times. In other words, the first human beings, the primordial humans, had the ability to see God completely. From end to end, or as we would say, to see the nothingness. Kabbalah teaches us that at certain times people had an awareness of God in this way. King David, Moses, perhaps even the Hebrews leaving Egypt. It's what we should aspire to do, is to find more of God. To find more of this first day light. Because we as human beings only see God in a limited fashion. We see little slivers of God. Why? Because the more we act as human moral beings, those slivers become thicker. The more we become nothing and think about the whole instead of ourselves, the more light we receive. We sometimes chastise God for not sending us messages or enough light, but Kabbalah teaches us that most of the time the reality is that we simply don't listen or open our eyes. The mystics tell us it's like a little girl who plays hide and seek. At first she is fine hiding because her friends are looking for her. But when she believes they are no longer looking for her, or never were, she cries. Are we looking and listening for God? Sometimes it's not God's face that's hidden, but we who hide our faces. In the book of Exodus, we read how Popeye and God, Popeye the sailor, aren't good of him, share a similar motto. When Moses is first introduced to God at the burning bush, God presents God's name as Asher Yasher, which in Hebrew means, I am what I am. And that's all I am. For Kabbalists, this means God says, I am what I am to each individual. We cannot see all of God. We can only see as far as the portion of God we can see, but we know we are part of the whole. When we are a wave, we see that we are part of the ocean. We know the ocean goes on and on, even if we can't see it, yet the Kabbalah teaches us that we all have a purpose in life, even though we are a wave in the ocean. Our purpose in life may only be to make one split-second decision that affects only a few people directly, but more people indirectly. That may be our only purpose in life, to make one decision. What's the catch-22 here? We don't know what that decision is. We don't know what our purpose is until after we die. So we must become an agent of God and continue to request God's presence continually, because we never know when we finish that purpose, when we fulfilled what we are supposed to do. What I've shown here is just a little bit of Kabbalah, a little bit of how we can stretch our minds to find God. How do we act as good people? How do we search? How do we rethink how we think? We are human beings. We should be stretching our mind when it comes to God. Sometimes we put God in a box and think life is simple. We understand, though, that in reality, this gift we have is our mind, and it should be stretched. The Kabbalists give us a lot of ways to try and seek God and teach us how to behave as human beings. One of my favorite belief systems in Kabbalah is this. In Kabbalah, it is believed that when a child is born, he or she is born with a sliver of light that connects to God. This little sliver we talked about earlier. And you have that sliver of light with you at all times. Until you go under the chuppah. If you're lucky enough to find your partner in life, and you go under the chuppah, the marriage canopy, your sliver of light disappears for that one moment in time. And as soon as you leave the chuppah together with your partner, you don't have two slivers of light anymore. Instead, you have a giant pillar of light. Because finding your partner is an essential part of life. But so too is acting as a good human being. So too is remembering that you are part of the whole. So too is honoring God by saying, I'm going to try and do better each day. So as I stand here today in front of you, I see a lot of slivers of light. This is a community that does a great deal for our Savannah world. This is a community that dedicates itself in so many ways, and I am so proud to be part of this community. I'm so proud to be your new religious leader. And I want to thank you again for inviting me to spend some time with you. May each of us continue to search for God in new ways. May each of us reach for more and more of that light of God. Even if we know we will never probably see it all as we live on this earth, we know it's out there and we are still expected to search. Thank you again.